We have more of Lake Effect Now. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for being here with us. Chloe Ellefson encounters more mayhem than you might imagine for a curator at Old World Wisconsin. Well, fortunately for all of us, Chloe is a fictional character, and the murders that she helps unravel are also fictitious. The latest installment in the series featuring Chloe and her love interest, the police officer Relke McKenna, is called Tradition of Deceit. It finds Chloe working on a murder in Minneapolis, while Relke is trying to solve a grisly crime in Milwaukee. There's also a third plot underlying the book, playing out in the Midwest a century ago. Author Kathleen Ernst spoke to us recently about this latest novel, and she explains how she starts a new story.
What I always start by thinking about is where my characters are at the beginning of a book, and how are they going to grow and change emotionally over the course of the book, and where I see them by the end of the book. And then I look for stories that will help reflect that. So in Tradition of Deceit, I knew I wanted to present some challenges for Chloe and Relke, my two main characters, and I knew I did want to focus on a new to the series ethnic group, which is Polish culture. And I also really like the idea of having an urban story, because most of what I've done in the past has looked at rural communities. So everything sort of came together from there.
There's a certain grittiness in this novel that isn't necessarily as present in your previous work. And in the case of the part that plays out in Minnesota, kind of a literal grittiness.
Yes, absolutely. Chloe is in Minneapolis, and she is helping a friend who's in the process of considering how to turn an abandoned flour mill into a museum. And at the time, the mill has been abandoned for many years. There's lots of equipment. It's really a huge hulk and ruin. So there is literal grittiness there. It was a fabulous situation to set a mystery in. Then in the Milwaukee portion of the book, Relke is in Milwaukee investigating the murder of a friend. And there is a little bit more of an edge to this book. His best friend was murdered while on duty as a police officer. It's not an overtly violent book in any way, but it is certainly a little edgier than the books that I've done in the past.
And darker, too,
and
I would
little
say.
Darker, yes. It has to do with loss of a very personal friend for Relke, so that's very personal. And it also explores the whole issue of, as these two people, Chloe and Relke, are learning how to be a couple, what does that mean? And for each of them, they discover that people that they're very close to have been keeping secrets, and that presents some real emotional challenges for them.
I think one of the significant developments in this book that you allude to is that it does feature both Chloe and Relke, but they are apart for nearly the entire book.
They are, and that presents a challenge for the two of them. And Relke is also a very he can be a very hard-focused guy. And when he discovers that, first, his friend has been killed, and then, second, there's some allegations that perhaps his friend was drinking on duty, and he starts getting concerned that maybe the investigation is not going to proceed as it should, he charges to Milwaukee, and he is heads down doing what he feels he needs to do. And that really leaves no room for Chloe, right when she feels that she should be there for him and be a support for him. So that gives her sort of the green light to go to Minneapolis and help this friend who's having a problem. But they are apart. It presents some real challenges for their relationship. And they have to, both of them, really think about, what am I bringing to this relationship? What am I comfortable with? And how much am I going to share with this person?
Let's shift back to Minneapolis for a bit. Talk about who's murdered in that scenario. This is a murder that actually takes place in this abandoned flour mill.
That's right. The murder victim is a professor, and I'm looking at the period in the early 1980s, which is the time that the Minnesota Historical Society and the city were trying to figure out, what are we going to do with this huge hulking ruin. A lot of people who didn't have homes were finding shelter there, and then a lot of kids who were just looking for a place to run around and get into trouble were sneaking in. And the professor was one of the people who really felt passionate about this building, that it deserved to be preserved, and that the stories needed to be told. So on Chloe's first visit to the mill, unfortunately, they find the body of the professor hidden in some milling equipment.
As we said, you have three simultaneous plots running through the book. talk about what was going on before the turn of the 20th century and shortly after. This is we're learning about the Polish immigrant community in the Midwest.
Yes, because I have such a strong interest in history and talking about immigrants, although usually to rural areas, I was really fascinated to discover what I could about some of the earliest workers in the mill district in Minneapolis. And for a lot of people, including Polish immigrants who arrived really with nothing, they moved into a community called Bohemian Flats, which is just down the river from the milling district. And it was a very close-knit community, even though there was a lot of diversity. And people started trudging up the hill and going to work in the mills. It was a very hard job in the 1870s, 1880s, a lot of very physical labor. And, of course, at first it was all men. And I'm looking at an extended family, a Polish family, four generations of women. And because no mill jobs were available when the Magdalena, my first immigrant, arrives, she was running a boarding house. And then in time, her granddaughter gets one of the first milling jobs for women during the war.
And works in a part of the mill referred to as no man's land.
No man's land, yes. That was a very special place for them, and it literally was no man's land. They had a lounge with a piano, and it was a place where they could gather. It was very hard work. They were filling sacks of flour, 5-pound sacks, and they really had a quota that they had to meet. But it was also a place where women, I think, could feel empowered because for the first time they were earning money. And they had this place where they could spend time with other workers and make friends. And I think for most of them it was a really positive experience.
Well, what was the central tension in the lives of these immigrants that you were trying to capture in telling this part of the story?
As time went on, there was a lot of tension within the mill as certain mill workers try to work with management to create better working conditions. Initially, they were working very long days, and especially for the men who were hauling barrels of flour and loading train cars, it was just grueling labor. And in the early years, before people understood about the safety concerns with flour dust in the air, there was actually something called miller's lung. And the early workers said that there were days in the mill where there was so much flour dust in the air, if you held your arm out, you couldn't see your hand at the end because of all the haze. So there was definitely some conflict over the years as labor worked with management to try to get better working conditions.
How much time do you have to spend in places like Milwaukee and Minneapolis to feel like you can credibly portray these, you know, not just the modern day story that Relke's involved in, but the historical ones as well?
I spend a lot of time. I cast a very wide net as a researcher, and I spend a lot of time learning and thinking before I ever start to write any of the books. And I feel very strongly about having a good sense of place. As a reader, I enjoy books with a strong sense of place, and I want to instill that in the Chloe Ellefson mysteries as well. So I do spend a lot of time. I spend a lot of time in both areas and learned also as much as I could from written resources, diaries that might be left. And I was lucky enough to work with experts also in both cities. The Minneapolis Historical or the Minnesota Historical Society staff was fabulous. And in Milwaukee, I worked with people at the Old Southside Settlement Museum who were kind enough to give my husband and I a private tour of their marvelous museum and talk with me and in both cases reviewed the manuscript for me. And that, I hope, all that sort of sifts into the novel. Even though everything I learned can't make it into the novel, I hope it instills a good sense of reality for the reader.
One of the things I noticed, though, in comparison to previous Chloe books, there are far fewer sort of traditional crafts and tools that make appearances in this book, though we should say there's a lot of traditional Polish food that appears.
There's a lot of traditional Polish food, and also I did go in a slightly different direction. I wanted to focus a little bit on a Polish folk art, and I chose something called wycinanki, which is paper cutting. And
I'm glad you pronounced that for me.
yes, that's as I understand, that's what my Polish friends tell me. It's a vibrant, beautiful art. And that also provides a bit of a link between what's going on in Minneapolis and what's going on in Milwaukee.
And this is a tricky subject to get into because I think as people read the book, they'll discover what's going on here. But you also delve into some real social issues that have carried on from for a long time and in this case from the early 20th century through the present day.
This book is full of that. In a single issue, it talks about the plight of homeless people in our urban areas. What do they do if they have no other alternative, and who is going to help take care of them? And then in a broader sense, in this book, I really wanted to look at the whole issue of power. Who has power? What will people do to get power? What will people do to hang on to their power? And that can be very broadly defined. It might be a professional relationship. It might be a personal relationship. But those struggles are really at the heart of both of the murders. And especially for women, that resonates both in the historical timeline and then in both of the modern day timelines. What happens when women have to confront someone who has more power than they do, and sometimes that person might be abusing their power.
Is there another Chloe novel in the works already?
There is. I'm delighted to say that I'm almost finished working on the next Chloe novel, which will be out next fall. And it's a little too early to talk about that, but I'm excited about it. And then I'm under contract for one more after that.
Kathleen Ernst, thank you so much. Congratulations on the new book.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Tradition of Deceit is the latest novel by Kathleen Ernst. It's the fifth in a series of mysteries featuring Chloe Ellefson. Ernst is also the author of numerous historical novels for the American Girl series. She lives in Middleton. We'll take one last break, and then singer-songwriters Peter Mulvey and Willie Porter join us in the studio to play some tunes and talk about the Lamplighter Sessions in Fort Atkinson. Stick around. You're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio.